accession number 9364, Reel 7.
Mr. Bethel, Reel 7.
Yes, so I had a peep at him and he'd been shot right through the head. And, of course, it was a saddening sight. And we marched back through the forest. We slept at a little post a bit farther back. But you must realise that this forest was treacherous beyond words. I mean, our commandos, I reckon they'd have put an army of commandos when you wouldn't have known. You would have said, we haven't seen a man move. And the modern soldier would have been through there and at the back of you with a gun running your head. They reckon the Marines in Malaya actually dropped from trees onto chaps as they went past. Well, these were professional soldiers. We were mugs. I mean, in as much as it was a scientific business, unless you wanted to die. However, we got back, we had a sleeper at this little station on the way back, and then finally went back to Capsalca. When we got to Capsalca, they buried Captain Burton. We stayed there the night. And it was sad. People were anxious to know what was happening. Poor brutes. They were little peasants. They were saying, well, do we die? Do the Russians, do the Bolsheviks take over? Are they going to shoot us if they do? And they would look at me being young and silly, and I suppose they thought to themselves, he might tell us something. And to show their loyalty to whatever cause they wanted to appear loyal to, they showed us medals they won during the war and all this kind of thing. And I felt sick at heart because they were saying, how do we live? How do we live? And so anyway, eventually the other bugler and I went on our way back to the main theatre. When we got there, they decided to pull out and they retired the whole force on Capsalga again. The original intention had been to walk or go around the lakes about 100 miles and fight your way round till you got to the railway that side, which apparently would have given the army plenty of time to pull out. And the sadness of the Russian people, to me, was terrible. They were peasants. They were no way, no guile, no nothing. They weren't Bolsheviks, or whatever you like to call them. They were just hoping to live, thankful to live. Anyway, we got back to Capsalga and they held a meeting in the square there, if you can call it a square. 200 people is the population of this tiny village, tiny place. And I said, we're going to go back to the railway, but we have to walk 100 miles back to get back to the railway again. Is there anybody who would volunteer to cover the retreat? We want a platoon of men that stay behind. Well, by this time, I was thoroughly scared. I don't know whether to be scared of the enemy or our own people. So I volunteered to stay. And this this party was going to leave 3 days after the main forces got back. And apparently they were going to leave the white Russians in charge, because the ultimate was obvious. Directly we pulled out, there was no stiffening there. they were going to give way to the authority of Russia, which was the Bolsheviks. There were thousands of rubles, about paper rubles. I told you about that. One Marine had a kit bag full. Thought he was going to be a millionaire when he brought back. And of course, they were useless. And so was your money useless. You saved them skulk rubly, how much? I said, near to Dobra. Preserve, have you got a tin of jam? We'll have that. Yeah, tin of jam, yes. We'll give you an Eichen for that, if you like. Whatever they had, they would give you. And poor devils, you couldn't help but feeling love for them. I did. I felt so sorry for them. Their home was butchered by these different denominations, or whatever you like to call them, and we were going to pull out. So the main party finally started this roughly 100 miles walk to get back, and left us in the square, and we remained there for the 3 days necessary to give them chance to pull out. Incidentally, the whole forces were pulling out. It is understood by some that Churchill had said, we won't send any more army into Russia, but they sent the Marines instead. We were the mugs who were going to go.
How many of you stayed behind to cover the retreat?
30. Ex-Platoon, it was called. And we... It's in the history book. I've got the history of the Marines down at my son-in-law's. We got the book. He wants to keep them, so I keep them. I gave them to Dad originally. And the Marines weren't proud of it because we didn't catch a Russia. And we might have done.
How long were you there?
Any event, 4 months, I reckon, 4 or 5 months.
When did you go out?
It's a job to attend it without. I can see my papers and I can't find them anywhere. I've searched those. I could find out from the.
And which unit were you with anyway?
6RM battalion, you see. They took away the Royal Marine Artillery from us when they got there, and they kind of split us up. They wanted us in different parts, you see. The effort was, I think, to kind of make sure that we were a new force, and they wanted the Russians to think we were going to attack when they were going to pull out. Anyway, eventually the 3 days elapsed and we started our march back.
What did you do during those 3 days?
Just hung around in the village. I wondered if they were stiffened the white Russians, which were unreliable, because imagine you've got to split a country against itself. And I don't think that's not so easy done, is it? The secret of running a prison or running any people is to keep the majority on your side. That's democracy, isn't it, as I see it? In running a prison, you've got to have the inmates thinking that you're not too bad, so that anybody's going to attack you, you would know first.
Were there any incidents caused by this retreat?
Incidents? In what way, dear?
Amongst the white Russians.
Oh, yes. I imagine so, but if so, their loyalties, you know, they were all trying to force their point of view, and it was terrible to us.
How did they retreat you, the ones who stayed?
We didn't have any trouble with them. I fancy the Russians, between themselves, had said, when these people clear out, if they do, you can come and take over. Because a fortnight after we left Murmansk, they'd covered 1,000 miles and they were in charge of the lot. So it's a kind of a mutual thing between a nation within itself, isn't it? How can you divide them against one another? was it? Split and conquer. So we came on back.
Did the Bolshevik forces come in to the village?
Not when we were there, no. That's 30. We would have stopped them. Because it's one thing attacking and another thing defending. Defence is easy. Because you're not making any noise, you don't move. You just sit there and say, "You come on, we'll kill you." That's the position they were in. With the accuracy of a modern rifle, imagine 4 inches, 300 yards. You know, all you've got to see, and the other man's dead.
What defence plans did you have?
We had the trenches. We had trenches in front of the forest. So if you march through, the lake was on one side, you see, and it gave us one flank that was protected by water. But I know we marched back. It took us 3 days to march back, and when we got to in the middle of the run, we came to a tiny Russian school. And it's so sweet when you think of a school of learning and little children, you're glad to lay down on their boards and say, "Thank God for this little children's school where they're learning, and I'm going to be comfortable for a night. Otherwise you lay in the ditch or wherever you could." And we gradually going back to a place called Mijibagora. And when we got to Mijibagora, they had, for some reason or other, I can't understand why they had hot water in a stream. And you could go and bath in this hot water. And of course it was a luxury. It's got a bit of warm water around your body and know you're going to be warm and clean. And then finally, the Yanks had pulled out, everybody pulled out by us mugs, and we went on the train and came back to Murmansk. When we got back there, we were billeted again. We had little or no food because there was nothing, nothing, no bakery, and you're not civilized, you're just in this atmosphere of need. And I went aboard the Glory. For some reason, they sent me aboard to get something. God knows, somebody, some kind bloke must have thought he'd get a dinner if he goes aboard there. And there I was with all the majesty of His Majesty's Navy with their cooking utensils. And what was it? I don't know who the bloke wrote the history I recently did for Sharon. I wanted her to take history. And he talks about the Navy with their great protection against the poor PBI who just died in mud and dirt. And there I went aboard the Glory and they said, "Would you like a dinner sticks?" I said, "Dinner? Dinner, yes." And they gave me this dinner and I ate it and I thought, I gobbled it down, didn't eat it. And finally back to the ship again, and we were brought out. And a fortnight after we left, the Red Russians had taken over the lot, so they weren't going to be terribly loyal to us. We were their enemies.
How did the civilian population react as you marched back to...
Oh, we didn't march back, dear. When I say the civilian population was nil, Murmansk was a... I saw Murmansk on the telly the other day, and it leaves me aghast. I feel like a little child. When we were there, there were only 10 people and a dog, kind of thing. Civil population of Murmansk probably, as with every port, they get used to luxuries and things that come from trading and that. Takes you back to Troy, doesn't it?
Can we go back to when you were in the forest?
Yes.
Can you tell me what sanitation was like? What
Oh, you just sanitation was none. It didn't matter where you were excreted or anything else. You just, because you were kind of well, just living close to nature. You just had to, there was plenty of room, find a tree and use it, that kind of thing.
Did you have any washing facilities?
No, nothing. Nothing to wash with. You just kept your clothes on. And on the second front, I had my clothes on for 21 days without taking them off.
Did you have any problems with lice?
No, not those two. I think the weather was more or less out to you, you know. And of course, you shaved your head right off. Everybody had their head shaved off. You're so difficult to understand. The head was shaved, you know. You had nothing. Oops, breaking mum's cups.
You say the climate helped you. What was the climate?
The climate was spring-like, I would think. In England, you know, it wasn't freezing snow and all that. It would have been if we'd have stayed there any longer. Well, you imagine what it would like up our country way in the winter. We wouldn't have had a hell in China. We knew this. I mean, we were fighting time, and Churchill had said there weren't be any more soldiers sent. No, he sent us, Marines. Typical Churchill move.
What was the temperature like at night?
Reasonable. Not too cold. I had a pair of snowshoes. I never used them.
What bedding? You say you slept in the dugout. What bedding did you have?
Oh, no bedding. Just a blanket. Whatever you could get hold of. Nothing. We were given iron rations. Iron rations were a bag, a white bag. And that white bag contained a piece of cheese, hard biscuits, possibly a small tin of sausage and beans or something like that, or pork and beans. That was the favourite, pork and beans. The pork was about a square inch of fat, with beans, and that would be pork and beans. Of course, to get water, you had to go and get water from the village the best you can. And of course, you had the feeling that they weren't on your side. You were living amongst people that necessarily were going to be on the side who give them a grub, the side who could help them in some way. They were destitute. And I had no hatred for them, none whatsoever. It was a sacrifice of men that was stupid and extreme.
What were your losses like?
Not terrible, because they'd pulled out, thank God. But Burton was killed, and a number of others, of which I'm not aware. I could show you the book, which is down at Dad's. But they were bad enough. And would have been, if we'd have gone on and tried to go around those lakes, we'd have possibly not got round at all. Unless you want to be absolute butchers and do a commander for it and kill people by the dozen. Shoot first and ask questions afterwards whether they were innocent or what they were. Russia was in a turmoil. What a great nation to be in such a turmoil. When you think about it, when you realize what Napoleon and I was sure in Malta during the siege when I told the internees, Russia must declare war on Germany. They got to do that or they're going to be a third-class power. They can please themselves. The internees used to say, you will say this. But directly it happened, they collapsed. Their morale was done. They thought, I got this right. What he said is right. I had a chap came back to me from the forces after Dunkirk, and where I used to lecture them on what would happen. He said, all the time I walked back from Dunkirk, I could see your face, and I could only hear you talking to us in the choir shed. And their job was under punishment in detention to pick choir, and they used to pick choir.
Whilst you were in Russia, what was the morale of the troops like with all these problems that you had?
Well, can you imagine? You went down this road here. You could hear every other house had a piano. There were no guitars there that I know of. And every house you could hear, I'm forever blowing bubbles, pretty bubbles in the air. The war's over, the war's over. Everybody rejoice. London was full of high shows and high kicking and jazz and all that. And here we were stuck out in Russia, fighting somebody that didn't want to fight us anyway. And we didn't want to fight. And extrication of troops there was important, more important than anything else, as I should think. I mean, mistakes have been made in the past, loads of mistakes, and the answer to it all is to realise your mistake and not do it again.
What were relations like between the men and the officers?
The men and the Russians?
The officers.
I would think that the officers were... Burton was a great captain. I think this. In the Marines, in my experience, I have met many little corporals. Snakey Longhurst. Brilliant. A corporal. Brilliant. A number of great fellas. I would think maybe 100, maybe 200. Everyone would be fit to be a general, in my opinion. I would have trusted Snakey Longest anywhere. I tried to beat him at chess. I was reasonably good. Pretty good. But always Snakey beat me. And if whatever Snakey was going to be put in charge of would be good. No question about it. And I think that we had a number of... Without, I wouldn't know them, because I didn't know every Marine. At one time during the First World War, there were as many as 250,000. But I would know of their quality, of their experience. Voice. If you caught Snakey, you were going to be clever. And I think that there had nobody in that class in charge. Because as I tell you, Wellington was my ideal because he didn't make mistakes. He made the enemy make mistakes. I had a hook nose. He was...
What happened when you... Did you sail straight for home from Romance?
More or less, yeah. As I say, I came back to ever-growing bubbles. Never forget this street, this road down here, every house. You could hear them singing, I'm forever blowing bubbles. And
how did they treat you when you came back from Russia?
Badly. They wouldn't send a van for us. They regarded us as, well, we should have captured Russia. Yeah, we didn't. Wellington wouldn't have expected this. But he wouldn't have been wrong. I mean, it's one thing to...
Did people actually say to you that you should have captured Russia?
Oh, no, but this was a general impression. With a pint of beer, I'll capture anywhere. You give me a pint of beer, back 6 pints. I said, yeah. It's one thing to talk about it and another thing to do it. And, of course, Bunker's Hill. Look at Bunker's Hill.
How did you feel about the reception that you got when you came back?
Well, my own father said to me, did you do anything brave? Did I do anything brave? 72, did I capture Russia? No. I didn't, dear. I did come back 3 days after the main party. I was in one of the rear guard for them at 17. I thank Captain Burton, perhaps, for my life. Because he could, that morning, he could have said, oh, come on, son, I want you with me. And I'd have blundered on like a little fool, wouldn't I? And I'd have been shot, like he was shot. He was a brave officer. And a good one. But even he didn't black his face. Oh, God. You don't black your face. You flipping. There was one Marine, I'll never forget, I said to him, what happened to you? He said, I got my head down behind a big stone and stayed there, he said. And I don't blame him. I mean, if you expose yourself in a tree, you walk from one tree to the other, you're going to be shot. This is murder. No, it was great sadness, and the greatness of the Corps was not in peril. It was just a big, it was there from the top. Would you expect to send a couple of hundred or even 400 men and say capture Russia with them? No. You see what I mean? The thing is, dear, that they were...
Were the Marines disillusioned when they came back?
Well, I was. I was. I felt that there was no cunning there at all. I think perhaps we were trying to bluff more than doing anything else, because morale is something you create and you get away with it. You don't. What was Admiral Duncan threw flags outside of Copenhagen, he had a great big fleet there waiting, and he had no fleet at all. Bluff. I think we tried to bluff our way, and who the hell can they undertake to tackle Russia? And Napoleon couldn't, the Kaiser couldn't, and Hitler couldn't. I mean, you might capture the mind. The mind's more important than the body. The mind, what the body's going to do. I feel that if you've got the mind, you're not very worried about the body. I'm not worried about the atom bomb, because I don't think they'll ever have the sense, the nonsense to use it, and that's it.